Starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me. Have to teach the children about living with each other, 'cause the future will soon be in there. Watching the crows as they follow us.
Hello and welcome to Spingola and Friends. It is Monday, September 1st, 2014. This is Deanna Spingola. We have no corporate sponsors for this weekly radio program. Therefore, it is for people who can really handle the truth. My website is spingola.com, where you will find information about my books, The Ruling Elite series. Also, the timeline of book 2 and 3 are there. They are a work in progress. I would love to have you also visit the website of a friend and dear, well, he's a dear person, just a wonderful person, individual, friend, listener, who has created and maintains the website spingolaspeaks.wordpress.com. All of the recent audio files of my programs are on that site, including the RBN programs and the AFP programs, which are no longer online anywhere else. If you have questions, please telephone 646-787-1915. We will also be taking questions and comments from listeners via my email, comment@spingola.com, or from the chat room, spingola.chatango.com. My guest today is Marty Oakley, O-A-K-L-E-Y. Her website is ppjg.me. All righty, Marty, welcome to the program. Let me get rid of this music completely. Okay, there we go.
All right.
Marty,
well,
welcome.
Well, thanks for having me on here today. I really appreciate it.
Well, you're entirely welcome. A mutual friend of ours recommended your site and you late last year, and I believe we talked briefly, and then I got really busy, and we just never connected again. I'm sorry for that, but here we are, and I'm so happy that we finally got an opportunity to visit.
Well, like, you know, we were talking about it, there is so much going on, and as you become involved, actually involved, it becomes overwhelming at times, the amount of correspondence and communication that's going on with people that have information, people that, if nothing else, have commentary, or people who have been subject to something that has gone on, and it can consume entire days just trying to keep up with that. So it's an easy thing to have happen and
sure.
Lose sight. You just get overwhelmed. And I know I field about 200 emails a day on average. And it just, you have to pick through. You have to pick through. You can't do them all, so you have to pick through.
Sure, yes. I have that issue also, but I know how you feel. It's when you first get into this, well, what we call the truth movement, you can just get so entrenched that you're spending, well, I spend pretty much every day, all day, on what I do. And I can't seem to help myself, because, and I wake up thinking about the issues that I am working on. And the ordinary person, the common person, does not do that. And I am grateful for the opportunity, as I'm sure you are, that you have the time, the energy, and the interest to bring the things to the attention of others that you do.
Well, it's been a process. I've always been politically involved, even as a young woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I am not a young woman now, but always was. But, of course, I had children and, you know, a home to take care of and everything, and I still do. I have grandkids living with me now, and at home to take care of and all of these things. But I got involved, and the more I've always been an avid reader, and I can remember before I had access to something like the computer, hearing on the news, when the news actually was any kind of news, about them passing various bills and pieces of legislation, and what little I knew about the Constitution and constitutional law, my instinctive reaction was, they can't do that. They can't do that. But I had to, at that point in my life, push it aside, Deanna, because I say, you have all these primary concerns, your family, your home, getting your kids to school, I mean, the whole thing. And, but as they left home, I found myself, and back, and I think it was in 2001, I bought a computer, my first computer. And when they delivered it, Dan, I was thinking to myself, oh, why did I do this? What am I going to use this for? And then I turned it on and realized that it was like a library to the world.
Right.
And when I found out I could go anywhere on this thing, I could go into the National Archives, the Federal Register, I could look at actual legislation, I could listen to hearings, I was just stunned. And I became just absolutely obsessed with the amount of information that was readily available if you looked for it. If you looked for it. But the problem is, most people don't.
Most people don't know what they don't know. They don't know to look for anything. They get their information from the television. And I remember my first computer, I bought it in, it was either 84 or 85. I'm thinking 85. 85. And I live in the Chicago suburbs. I could not, there were no computer stores in the Chicago area. I had to actually order my computer. It was a Leading Edge Model D from a firm in California. And, of course, it was, you know, the old DOS style and everything. And then I just kept purchasing, you know, you wear that one out and you... Yeah, so they're just wonderful technology, and it has opened up a lot of information for everyone.
It has, Deanna, and the thing is, as a writer, and I've been writing for 25 years, but as a writer, one of the things I learned early on was to document what I write, resource it. It was a hard lesson to learn because I knew what I knew, and in my arrogance, I assumed everybody else knew what I knew.
Or would believe what you told them without saying, well, where did you get that information?
So I learned very quickly to put this in. It knocks down all the arguments. And all of the, oh, you're crazy, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist, and I chronically ask people who come after me, send me vicious emails and everything else, I'll write back and say, why are you angry at me? I didn't write this stuff. I showed you that it was there. I showed you who wrote it, who sponsored it, who paid for it, and what it's going to do to you. Why are you angry at me? And then I don't hear any more from them. The term conspiracy theorist, conspiracy theory, that's just great. When you say you have a theory, the implied impression is you have made an assumption about a specific situation or event for which you have no evidence to support your assumption, your conclusion. That's not a theory. When you can pile up evidence to where it's busting out the walls to support why you're suspicious, that doesn't make you a theorist. It makes you a fact finder. A theory is basically, I've got these ideas, I don't have anything to support it, but this is what I think. And like I say, you cannot look on the net and see the massive information that has been compiled and documented and come away and call people like me or you or anybody else a conspiracy theorist. There's too much out there that says otherwise. But we see these terms brought up all the time. One of the current phrases used to describe anyone who doesn't go along with the government-approved line is kooks and extremists. I have seen that phrase used probably 100 times just in the last month to describe anyone of either, from either side, of either any stripe, who doesn't go along with the set program.
Mm-hmm.
They're kooks and extremists. Well, the kooks and extremists, in my opinion, are sitting in our legislatures. They're sitting out in D.C. Those are the kooks and extremists, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just, you know, you face this stuff as you work through these things and you deal with people, and it's hard enough trying to get through this stuff and put a cohesive article out there or deliver a good piece of information, then you have these people who attack.
Mm-hmm.
And they're paid many times to do exactly that. And
so are you saying that you think there are infiltrators within the so-called...
Oh, sure, of course.
Yes.
Of mm-hmm. course.
I agree with you there, for sure.
Yeah, of course. And you can usually pick them out, because they'll immediately, like on my site, the PBJ Gazette, every comment is moderated.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing gets on my site that I don't approve.
Mm-hmm.
And I will not tolerate profanity, name-calling, diversionary attacks, attacking the writer, attacking other posters. I won't put up with it. If you cannot conduct yourself civilly and carry on an educated conversation, you need to go to Alex Jones or something.
Sure.
They just love all that crap. It's a sewer over there. And they just, you know, and they love that kind of stuff.
Sure.
I don't. What I write and the people that write on my site, we work hard on what we put out.
Sure.
And I'm not going to let it be derailed by people
right.
who are paid in many instances to do exactly that.
Right. Yes, I'm against profanity, too. I think that people ought to be able to have a conversation with someone else without resorting to name-calling. Or, in fact, the saying that I always use is profanity is the effort of a, what is it, what do I say? It is the effort of a feeble mind to express itself forcibly. And if that's what you have to resort to, then...
Well, exactly. You know, I've used bad words myself.
Mm-hmm.
What bothers me is that these people will get out and publicly use this kind of language.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you want to represent yourself that way?
Exactly, because in the anonymity of the Internet,
mm-hmm.
you are representing everything that anybody knows about you is through your words. And this
right.
is how you want to represent yourself, as somebody that cannot even use English or the language appropriately without resorting to profanity and words.
Well, one of the advantages I have, unless people have listened to my radio show or they are familiar with me from the website, whatever, is that a lot of people, I get emails all the time, "Dear Mr. Oakley." Well, thank you. But they have no idea. See, and that's my first clue. They don't know nothing about me.
Exactly.
But they will say, once they find out I'm female, the tone of the conversation turns. I think one of the most recent experiences of, as a woman, being absolutely attacked viciously because I did not agree with the men was over on LinkedIn in a group called In Defense of Freedom and Against Tyranny or some such ludicrous name like that. And they were talking about Israel versus Palestine. And, of course, it was kill the Palestinians. And I said, you came on there and I said, you people are supposed to be Christians.
Exactly.
And you're talking about obliterating people whose land has been stolen from them, whose homes have been taken from them. They've been starved. They've been, you know, neglected.
Mm-hmm.
Everything has been done to these people to obliterate them. We're watching a genocide in progress.
Exactly.
And I said, I keep seeing through the conversation here where it says Israel is God's chosen people. Well, less than 20% of the people you're talking about are Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
And the other 80% are what they call Russian Jews, Khazars,
mm-hmm.
and that were brought out of Europe and down into Palestine. And I said, so basically, I said, using your line of thinking, I said, I happen to be part Indian. So I'm going to gather up some of my Indian friends, and we're going to come over to where you live. And because once a long, long, long time ago, we walked across that land, we're taking your house and all your possessions, and we're throwing you and your family out on the street. We're taking all your land. And by the way, you can't have any food, you can't have any water, and if you make a move, we're going to shoot you.
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay with you? And I said, because that's basically what you're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
These people, it was men. Men. The minute they realized I was female was the first flag. And the second that I stood up and said what I actually thought instead of kowtowing turned on me. I never saw anything like it. I watched this thing roll for several hours. And one of them actually came off of LinkedIn over onto my site and tried to post a very vicious, filthy comment on my site. So I put up his name and address. Said, this comment has been removed due to sickness. And
mental illness? Or
yes. Yes. But what I'm saying is once they found out I was female, most in particular, and here, one of the people on this was the treasurer for this ridiculous creation museum out in D.C. Here were these people on there that were supposed to be these pious, Christian, religious people using and applauding each other for how vicious they were with me.
Wow.
And how women need to sit down and shut up. Well, I have my thoughts on that too, but I'll skip that for right now. But what I'm saying is this exists everywhere. And so when you put yourself out there, particularly, I believe, as a woman, you are far more likely to be assaulted verbally and attacked. And I'll tell you, the name-calling is just unbelievable, just
oh, yes.
Absolutely unbelievable.
I get hate mail where I am called the C word. And just,
oh, yes.
Oh, my gosh. It's just amazing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yep.
Goodness. Because my website, I don't have any place to post anything.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I don't have the right, or I have not ever implemented that feature in the website. And because I'm not sure why, but, well, what kind of website do you have? Let's see. Let me just roll down
what
here.
What you're probably looking at is my blog. I have an actual website that backs
okay.
this whole thing up because I've been hacked numerous times. So I use the website.
Okay.
I keep it up to date with everything that's on the blog. The blog runs under the website.
Right.
And that's to protect everything I've done. Because, like I say, I've got years and years of work
sure.
on here.
Yeah,
and
WordPress offers you the ability to have people respond and make
mm-hmm.
public. Okay.
Yeah, but you can see, you can also, they give you the option of either allowing people to post at will or
uh-huh.
through moderation, and I always take moderation. We work too hard trying to present bona fide material to have
sure.
it discredited or derailed by people whose only mission in life is to create chaos. I
sure.
just can't have that. Like, say, they can go over to Joan's site or David Icke or something like that,
sure.
You know, and do their thing over there. But, yeah, it's been a ride, Deanna.
Yes.
It's been a ride. And, but, yeah, I don't know. There's two things that I have been focused on primarily for the last 4 or 5 years, and that is vaccines, which I am dead set against,
uh-huh.
and also guardianship abuse, as we talked about. And,
right. Now, you need to educate me about this. I am not, I'm sure that it happens, and
mm-hmm.
but I've not dealt with it or investigated it or researched it, so...
Well, what happened was here about 4.5 years ago, a friend of mine out in New York, John Wallace, who was at that time a blog talk radio host also, had emailed me and said, would you interview this lady? And I was just starting up. John actually helped me set up my own. He kept saying, you need your own show. And so he'd helped me set up my own blog talk show. And he said, would you do us a favor to me? He said, interview this lady. Her name was Sarah Harvey. I said, sure, I'd do it. So I talked to her, and it was about her husband, and he'd had a head injury, and this had happened, and that had happened. And I thought, well, gosh, this is going to be, I can do this. And so I did a two-hour interview with her. And I came away from this interview, Deanna, thinking, this woman isn't telling me everything. And it's the same response I see in the public in general when you talk about these predatory guardians, the stranger to the family stepping in, especially if there's a large estate, if there's lots of land, you know, if they've lived an upper middle class to wealthy lifestyle, you are particularly a target. And these strangers to the family will step in. They are notified, like, let's say grandma or grandpa, mom or dad goes to the hospital in the emergency room. The first thing that happens when you go in the hospital is you're being admitted. I don't know if you know this or not, is they do an asset search. And they claim the reason for this is to determine if you can actually pay the bill.
They do an asset search? Now, yes. Does that apply if you don't have insurance or Medicare?
It applies if you do. The first thing that is done is an asset search. And but you're not supposed to know that's going on. It's a lot of times is what takes admission so long, is they're doing an asset search, they're doing a like a financial search, they're back checking your insurance, they're doing it before they ever let you actually in that hospital. And
now, how do they do this if the medical records are, well, of course, the medical records have all been digitized. And they're available, I think, probably more so than they were before they said that they were going to be private.
Well, exactly, because Bush, in his first term, I think it was in 2003, set up the Electronic Medical Records Act, and he did it by executive order. And this was to be fully operational in October of 2014. Which coincidentally is the same year and month that Obamacare is to be fully operational, and the changes to Medicare, Medicaid are also to be fully operational. See, none of this is a coincidence, and it's, none of it is unrelated. This has been a long time in the planning, and it involved Democrats and Republicans both, the one-party system with two heads. They've been planning this and putting the pieces in together on it for decades. And so Obama came in with Obamacare, and of course this monstrosity has nothing to do with healthcare per se, but how to manage and ration and determine who's going to get healthcare.
Sure. Now, what
and
is the
too, babe.
What is the electrical, what was that, the name of that?
Electronic Medical Records.
Okay.
And what that did was it required that all medical records be databased, just like I'm here in Minnesota. All of our medical records, just like yours, are housed out in Maryland in a huge database. And this is why everything in Obamacare goes on the computer. Everything, I keep telling people, when you go to the doctor's office, if you go, please don't go unless you absolutely have to. Do not say one word other them the reason you are there. Do not engage in casual conversation. Don't get directed off into something else. Don't say anything, because if they are not typing as you speak, you are being recorded.
Oh, really?
Yes, you are being recorded. And this all goes into your medical jacket. Every diagnosis out there, I'm going to use, because another one of my big pet peeves is this psychiatry thing.
Sure.
And the attempt to drug our kids. They just passed the law up here to bring mental health clinics into our schools with targeted drug funding.
Right.
Okay. Everything that you say to that doctor has a risk number attached to it. At the end of the year, all your risk numbers are totaled up, and this puts you somewhere on a sliding scale of how much of a risk you represent to the healthcare system. Now, the higher that number, the higher risk you are. The higher risk you are, the higher your insurance rates are.
Okay, medical risk, like if you have, if you're diabetic and you have heart problems, and that would make you a high risk, right?
Right.
Okay. I don't have any of that, but
yeah, I don't either. And of course, I don't do vaccines and medications and
yeah.
all that stuff. So, you know, I'm
that's
pretty
probably
good
why we're healthy.
65. Yeah. And yeah, I don't have any of that. So, but this is what they do. Now, this information can be purchased, okay, by insurance companies, potential employers. It can be accessed by numerous government agencies. That information can be sold, bundled and sold at places like Accenture and ChoicePoint down in Atlanta. This is what how they make their living. They gather up this information, bundle it, they sell it to insurance companies and this and that. And the other thing that's being used for, you're going to love this, is they're creating hedge funds that include people that have things like breast cancer, leukemia, bone cancer, and everything else. And they're creating hedge funds. And the reason we will never have a cure for any of these things is because basically what the hedge fund revolves around is how long with these diseases do they anticipate you living? Mm-hmm. And if you die too soon, like if we find a cure for breast cancer, like that's ever going to happen.
Yeah.
If we find a cure for breast cancer, they said, if you do that, the fund will collapse. So mm-hmm. we have made a business and a market for illness. And so you go back to Obamacare, you go into that doctor's office. Like I say, don't you say a word about anything other than why you're there, and keep it short and sweet. And remember that if they aren't typing every word you say, you're being recorded. And all of this goes into your lifetime medical jacket. And this will be available for eternity to everyone but you. You can't see it. And if you try to see, yeah, if you try to see it, you have to go to court. You have to go to court.
That is
yeah.
very interesting.
Yeah. And now, like where we, our physician, you know, excuse me, they're spraying the fields up here, Deanna, and it just chokes me every time they do
it.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
But we get a printout of why we were there and any prescriptions, which is always zero. And then this last time I had to take the kids for a checkup before they went back to school, and they handed me a printout, and it was from my insurance company and Minnesota Department of Health. And it said, you are behind in these vaccines, and there's big lists of vaccines for each one of us.
Mm-hmm.
And we will schedule appointments for you so you can be updated on... No, you won't. So I came home, called, and they said, call them because they would give me the appointments they had made for me. I said, you can just unmake those because that's not happening.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you want your children to be healthy? I said, of course I do. That's why I won't let you inject them with all this toxic crap.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I said, we don't vaccinate. You do what you want to do. And if you think they're the magic shield that you believe they are, then please take mine. Then you'll be double protected.
Yeah.
And but anyway, we don't vaccinate. But what struck me was, here I'm at the doctor's office, and this is printed out and handed to me.
Before you even leave the doctor's office,
yeah.
they've already contacted.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Okay, now, let's say you're an elderly person, and let's say your house is paid for, and maybe let's just highball, you got $1 million estate, and liquid funds, property, personal assets like jewelry, maybe things like that. And you go into the hospital. Let's say you fall at home, break your hip. Go into the hospital. They're doing this asset search, and they already know pretty much before they ever let you in the door what
mm-hmm.
you got. They have people on staff in these hospitals. We have caught several of them, like a charge nurse, who immediately will notify a guardian that this person has come in and that they are this age, and you might want to come see them. The first thing that happens is they send in social services. And most people don't know that you can tell those people to leave your room. The second ones to come in is Adult Protective Services.
Oh, and they ask you if you want to do mm-hmm. some sort of a will or a power of attorney.
Well, yeah, they want to know what legal instruments you have, pre-needed instruments, that kind of
thing. None of their business, really.
It, exactly. And so they come in, and you can tell them to leave, too. Now, in both cases, what they generally do when they're run out of the room is they just create a false report. We've caught that several times, too. And then they notify this guardian, and actually what we are finding is they are paying, these guardians and attorneys are paying actual finder's fees to people who will point them in the direction of a possible target. And
do they medicate you accordingly or what?
Oh, yes. Forced medication. Now, they claim under HIPAA that you have the right to refuse medication. And but if you try to refuse medication, they consider that a mental disorder. Now they bring in the psychiatrist, who may or may not ever even visit you, okay? But they write a diagnosis to the court based on what other people have told them. Because after all, you know, they're psychiatrists, and they're just way too important and busy to actually talk to you. And so they write the diagnosis, and we have several times where we have caught emails where they have said to the judge or the guardian, will this do? Do you need me to write up something else?
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then the emergency petition for guardianship is granted to this total stranger to the family. Now, in every state, Anna, the statute says that the last thing you are ever to do is to isolate that elderly person, that they are to be encouraged to stay in contact with their family, their families to be encouraged to visit, remain in contact, phone calls, letters, whatever it is. The first thing they do is they put them in one of these warehouses they call a nursing home, and they immediately cut off visitation with the family. They isolate them.
Oh, my gosh.
The family represents a danger. You upset them. Well, I think probably taking them out of their house by force or kidnapping out of a hospital bed.
Yes.
And taking them to one of these warehouses probably is what upset them.
Now, what about people who have a spouse and the spouse is visiting at the hospital?
Doesn't make any difference. This is just, let's go back to Sarah Harvey that I initially interviewed.
All right.
When I interviewed her, like, see, I'm listening to this story of how her husband tripped and fell down the stairs in their home, in the basement stairs, and his head hit the wall. He suffered a severe brain injury.
Oh, bless his heart.
She called an ambulance immediately.
Of course.
Gets him to the hospital. They told her that he would need some surgery. He would need rehabilitation, and he might have some lasting effects from this, and it was just going to take time and rehab, and he should be back close to normal within maybe a year. She said, okay, leaves the hospital, comes back the next day for the surgery. She's met at the door by a security guard who tells her that she is now prohibited from seeing her husband.
What?
Because she presents a danger to him. A guardian stepped in. They were an upper middle class couple living in a very nice neighborhood, both employed, both just exemplary people. This has gone on for 7 years. They take this man's Social Security. They take They take his VA pension. He is still being held hostage in St. Joseph's Hospital, Chemung County, New York, after 7 years. The insurance company is now paying $1.2 million a year to keep that man there.
And that goes to the hospital and
the
doctors.
That goes to the hospital. The guardian... Now, her husband, because of the massive psychotropic medications, which you are not supposed to administer to people with brain injury because it causes more damage, this man has been unable to communicate now for more than 5 years. They just recently divorced Sarah from him, saying that's what he wanted. The guardian.
What?
Yes. Yes. They have tried to force her to sell her home so they can take the money. They have tried to force her out of her home. She has fought and fought and fought. Last year on Valentine's Day, she wanted to visit. It wasn't a regular day that she was allowed. She was allowed to visit 3 days a week, 2 hours at a time, with a security guard standing there. This is a little 5'2" woman to watch her. So she wrote the Guardian a letter and said, you know, I would like to visit my husband on Valentine's Day. You know, is it possible you could arrange this? The Guardian writes to the hospital and said, Mrs. Harvey can visit her husband under these conditions. She may kiss him on the cheek once. And she can hold his hand briefly. But she is to have no other contact with him. And if she cannot follow these rules, visitation will be revoked permanently.
Oh, my gosh.
We have the actual letter. And this goes on constantly. After I interviewed her, like I say, I came away thinking, oh, there's something this woman didn't tell me. You know, she's this. Is
well, it just sounds so unbelievable.
Right.
It's so illegal. It's so... It sounds terrible.
It's very legal. Unfortunately, it's unlawful, and there's a difference between lawful and legal. And, well, so after I hung up from this interview, Deanna, I started digging and searching. It took me 2 days, and what really struck me was after more than 2 decades of researching and digging, I had never come across this. This is how well it's hidden.
Wow. Oh, my God.
And when I dug this out, what was going on, I was right. She wasn't telling me all of it. It was way worse than what she was telling me.
Maybe she wasn't aware of how worse it was or how much.
Yeah.
Worse.
Yeah. Well, she had focused on her husband.
Sure.
And, you know, and basically to the exclusion of everything else, and it's all why she was on there, was trying to get some attention to this.
Sure.
What was happening to her and her husband. And so I started, like I say, when I started down this road, I had no idea what was ahead of me. In these 4.5 years, I have heard the most god-awful horror stories supported by court documentation. I have 162 cases sitting here of the most egregious assaults on people's lives, on their constitutional rights. They have gone into in every state and removed the due process clause from the guardian statutes and conservator statutes. Statute is not constitutional law.
And right.
I keep telling people these were created to bypass the Constitution. Administrative courts weren't erected because the state courts were so busy. And what were they going to do? I had one judge tell me last year, well, he said, if we hadn't set up administrative courts, he said, my God, we would have had to hire more judges and leased more courtrooms. And I said, isn't that just exactly what you did?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And he got mad and stormed off. And but these courts are set up to bypass the Constitution, to bypass your constitutional rights. We have numerous instances of judges telling people, if you mention the Constitution in my court again, I'll put you in jail. You don't have any constitutional rights in this court. It is one of the sickest, cruelest, most callous, depraved system I have ever seen. The worst part of it is it's predicated upon the Child Protective Services system, which is organized criminal activity.
Yes.
So they set up APS, Adult Protective Services, in the same way, and it's just a money mill. It's a quota system. We're going to drag in X number of bodies so that we can keep our job, keep our paycheck, keep our office paid for. Then what happens on top of this is this... I don't. It's like a horde of vultures descending on the victim.
Indeed.
The lawyers line up. The bigger the estate, the more lawyers. The guardians line up, and they all line up against the family and the friends, anybody that tries to extricate this individual. And they have a laundry list of accusations they make. Oh, we found your spouse, your mother, your father. We found them covered in feces and urine, living in squalor. They were sick and not being cared for. They were starving. They'll give the same laundry list time after time after time in exactly the same order against everybody they go into court against in front of the same judge.
Oh, and he's
who goes,
in on
oh,
it.
Okay.
He's in on it, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, none of this could happen without the probate judges.
Sure.
None of this. And So when you become a ward of the state, whether child, disabled adult, or elderly, you have become chattel property. This is, in essence, the definition of a civil death. You do not exist anymore. All of your rights, everything that is you, is handed over to that guardian. And the statutes will state that specifically, that all rights, possessions, material belongings are now in the control and possession of the guardian. In Texas, they just passed a law down there where they have to carry a placard, a small plastic little encased thing, when they're with one of their wards that says basically that they own that person. They can do whatever they want with them.
Oh, my gosh.
And this is what it is. This is human trafficking. This is human ownership. This is the modern-day version of slavery. We aren't working them to death. We are just bleeding them dry. Once you become guardianized, you have absolutely no rights of any kind whatsoever, even though the statutes say that the judge may determine which things will be handled by the guardian. They always give what is called a plenary, meaning total control. They immediately begin retitling property under their own names. They immediately begin bleeding off liquid accounts, cashing in stocks and bonds.
Holy cow.
They now can go into your house, go through all of your personal possessions, remove anything they want, and they will do that and then make the required inventory that they produce to the court that says there was nothing in there. There was nothing in there because the guardian and whoever was working with them went in there and cleaned the place out, got any antiques, any valuable jewelry, anything of any value out of the house. Then they do the...
That sounds like a nightmare. How do you prevent yourself from falling into this horrible...
Basically, right now, we've got no protection. We are targeted. We are literally targeted. We have... right up here where I live, law firms that are, you know, come to our dinner. Let us show you how to set up your...
Oh, yes, we have that. We're always getting some sort of a letter.
They're databasing, Deanna. They're databasing.
Oh, my gosh, is that what they're doing?
And see, the fraud of this is, and they should be charged with fraud because they are part of the same union, the Bar Association, the biggest, most lucrative, powerful union in the country. Nobody ever says a word about them when they're screaming about unions. But they belong to the Bar Association, and so they are supposed to be, since they are selling this product, schooled in guardianship conservatorship law. They already know that whatever they're selling you in the way of trusts and wills and whatever else, right in the statute it says that the judge, at his discretion, may discard pre-standing legal agreements and instruments if he sees it as an obstacle. They don't say an obstacle to what. So they already know when they're selling you this crap that a judge can throw it all aside at any, you know, at their own discretion.
Holy cow.
And they do it routinely. People think they're protected because they've set up an estate, and we went to our attorney, and, yeah, well, you just got sold a bill of goods, too. Because if you end up in one of these probate courts, that judge can say, well, we're declaring you incompetent right now. And so you must have been incompetent 20 years ago when you did these papers, so I'm casting those aside, and we're going to hand all this over to the guardian to manage your estate because you probably weren't in your right mind then either.
Holy cow. So you should stay away from hospitals, stay away from lawyers.
Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing is hospitals. Check your local hospital and find out if they're using what is called a hospitalist. And this is a new fad in hospitals, and this is where they hire physicians to work directly in the hospital, usually not outside of the hospital. They come in as a group. Now, their main function is to increase hospital profits by 20% minimally. You come into a hospital that's using hospitalists. Let's say your doctor says, I need to admit you into the hospital. The minute they admit you, your personal private family doctor is out the door. They're taken off the case immediately, and you are handed over to these hospitalists. There's one for each shift, each eight-hour shift. They know nothing about your history. They don't care about your history. They take your symptoms, possible diagnosis, they go into their computer program, which tells them, under insurance or Medicare, Medicaid, what the diagnosis is worth, what treatments and therapies are available for it, what medications can be applied, and their job is to make sure as much of that as possible is used.
Right.
Okay. Now, if they can't reach that 20%, it also kicks out and tells them what percentage this will increase the net on the hospital. If they don't reach that 20%, then they go to Plan B, which is a second set of diagnoses that they can come up with, options they can come up with. And they keep hitting them, and you'll start getting treated for things and get therapies and scans and MRIs and this and that.
Yeah, that you don't need.
Yeah. Until they hit that
patient,
mark.
The patient can say, no, I refuse this.
No, they can't. Well, they can if they're, you know, on private insurance. They can do that. But if you're an elderly person, no, you can't.
Oh, my gosh.
No, you cannot. If you're over 60 and you go in there, no, you cannot. That's when they send in social services. That's when they send in adult protective. And that's when you will see a psychologist show up that supposedly is going to evaluate you because apparently there's something wrong with you that you don't want to have an MRI when you just had one 3 days ago. And so the whole system is set against you. It's a dangerous place to be.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, it is a dangerous place to be. You are never more vulnerable these days as when you are in the hospital.
Now,
never, on many levels.
Let me ask you some questions about, you said that in order to get your records, say, for instance, a person goes to the hospital, and they're not aware of what medications were administered during their stay. Can they contact the hospital and say, I would like a record of all the drugs that you administered to me during my stay?
Now, you can do that if you go directly to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But, like, if you want to view your medical records.
The life.
Yeah. You can't do it. And you only have a window of time. And, like, if you go in, like, 2 years after the fact and say, you know, I was in here 2 years ago, and they gave me some medications, and I'm wondering what exactly it was I was given, at that point, they're going to want to know if you have an attorney. Because what they want to know is, are you looking at the lawsuit? Do you have an attorney? And even if you say no, well, what do you want these records for?
Oh,
because
my.
I want them. They've got my name on them.
Sure. Now, they can give you drugs that that are unnecessary.
Mm-hmm. Well,
when you're in the hospital. I mean, they can put anything in those IVs that they want.
Yes. And what they do is, when you're in the hospital, psychologically, you're in a very vulnerable position.
Oh, yeah, you don't have clothes on.
Yeah.
I mean, they do that on purpose.
That nurse comes in, yes, with that little cup of pills and says, take these, and you say, what is it? Well, the doctor wants you to have it. And the threat is, take it or else. We don't know what or else is in most cases.
Sure.
But, you know, I mean, that's the tacit threat. And so you're given, I had an experience with this myself, a knee replacement here 7-8 years ago. And I had a do not administer list. And the doctor decided she knew better than I did and jacked me up on all that stuff anyway. And I was unconscious for almost a week.
What did they give you?
Oxycodone, Vicodin, Vioxx.
Why?
I had two strokes. Mm-hmm.
Wait, you had strokes because of the medication?
Of Vioxx, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I had
why did they give it to you?
Because she knew better than I did.
But Vioxx. That's
now, I'll tell you something. I had put this on a do not administer list when I went into admissions.
Uh-huh.
And later on, when I'm screaming at the hospital about what happened to me there, they said there wasn't any such list. And I said, well, here's the problem with that. I made them make copies of my entire admission thing, including the do not administer list.
Uh-huh.
So I said, I have copies from you that this list did exist. So who removed it?
Holy cow.
Yeah. And
I know of someone that's allergic to a particular antibiotic, and it was in her hospital record never to take this, She had to go to the hospital a couple months later after this was entered into her hospital record. And lo and behold, they put it into an IV. And she went into anaphylactic shock.
Oh, God. Here a while back, my oldest granddaughter is allergic to penicillin. And we know this from when she was little.
Sure.
And so I had taken her to the doctor, and it was not our normal doctor that we saw that day. And she had a slight ear infection. And so this doctor said, well, let's see, are you allergic to anything? Penicillin. And he looks at me and scowls and says, who made that determination? I said, it wasn't me.
Holy
I said, that was the emergency room physician that said she's, you know, having an allergic reaction to the penicillin. She can't take penicillin. And he went like that. It was just like I had put this in there. You know?
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Well, children who, ear infections, I was reading this morning in one of my books that Dr. Robert S. Mendelson, he wrote, let's see what he wrote, Having Healthy Children in Spite of Your Pediatrician, and a couple of other books.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he said that ear infections should not be treated with antibiotics, that they go away on their own, but they treat. If you start treating with a lot of antibiotics, you run the risk of becoming antibiotic resistant, mm-hmm. Which leads to stronger superbugs. I mean, it's not a good thing.
Right. Well, and then, you know, Deanna, you know, through our food supply, especially meat, which we've basically quit eating.
Uh-huh.
It's a rare thing. My one granddaughter eats no meat whatsoever.
Uh-huh.
And then the other, very little, and me, very little. And usually that's chicken.
Uh-huh.
I, you know, might have some chicken. But, excuse me. But the because of what they're doing on these CAFO farms to these animals,
right,
that meat is rife with antibiotics, hormones.
Absolutely.
You know,
steroids, all kinds.
Vaccines, yeah, the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
So the way the animal's body handles that is to force that out into the meat.
Yeah.
To get it away from the internal organs.
Sure.
And so when they butcher, you basically are eating all of the residues from this.
Sure. Well, I buy grass-fed from an Amish farmer that doesn't do
Oh, bless your heart. And you're lucky, and because we just can't get that around here. And but so this was my big concern, this also this antibiotic resistance.
Sure.
I was concerned about, and I saw the effects of this, and I don't know what you know about the RBHG in the milk.
Yeah, I do. That's why I get raw milk from the same Amish farmer.
You see, there again, we can't get that here. But Kemp's Dairy here puts out Kemp Select, which is made without that in it. So we will buy that. But if I can't get that, we just don't have anything.
Sure.
And but, yeah, it's we are being steadily poisoned.
Right.
Through the food supply, and antibiotic resistance is just the tip of the iceberg. Vaccines, I think, represent a clear and present danger to the public health.
Sure.
The recent revelations about, you know, the cover-up at the CDC on the link to, between autism, and, like, who didn't know this, you know?
And they've known it for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the Simpson-Wood conference back in, when was that, 2001, they knew about this. They knew about vaccines. They knew about thimerosal and mercury damages and everything like that. And that whole conference was to figure out damage control, that they would keep all of this hidden from the American public.
Yes.
And so, I mean, it's just, now you said, and just this sentence struck me, people should not administer psychotropic drugs to someone with brain damage.
Right.
And it just popped out of my head. Okay, so children who have had vaccines, and this is my premise, my current premise. Children who have had vaccines often have brain damage as a result.
Oh,
and thereafter, many of them are given psychotropic drugs, which just exacerbates the the first issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, the psychotropic drugs, neuroleptics, they're called, cause a shrinkage of the frontal cortex of the brain.
Exactly.
Okay. And this is where your thinking, your rationale occurs, your inhibition,
yes,
that kind of thing, your inner controls.
Exactly.
This is where all this is located. So you're shrinking this. And as a result of that shrinkage, these controls are also diminished. So we see, and they admit it in these circulars, that it can cause aggression, suicidal or homicidal ideation,
right,
violence. You know, it can cause all of this stuff. Why in the hell would you give that to anyone?
Exactly.
Anyone. And, you know, I've used many times, Deanna, the analogy. If you went into the grocery store and picked up a head of lettuce that had a circular on it that said, you can eat this lettuce, but it can cause brain bleeds, aneurysms, heart attacks, strokes, blood clots, seizures, paralysis, vomiting, diarrhea, would you still take it home and eat it? Why do people accept these medications? Because a doctor wrote out the prescription.
Exactly.
That very plainly and in your face says, don't take this stuff, it can kill you.
Right. Are you familiar with Dr. Jennifer Daniels?
No, I'm not.
She wrote this fabulous book, Lethal Dose. And literally, and I've read several other people, a lot of books lately about this, that all medications are toxic, okay? All of them, period, plain and simple, all medications are toxic. And there's a slight difference between what a medication may do to benefit you,
right,
and poison.
Well, this is what I tell people. That list of possible adverse reactions, including death, I'd say that's pretty adverse.
Sure.
But that list is actually the intent of the medication. The side effect of is if it actually does do that little bit of help for the actual,
right,
problem.
Exactly.
That's the side effect.
Yes. And that, Jennifer Daniels says, that drug, those are the effects of the drug. The side effects are the effects of,
yes,
the drug. You may escape them, but those are the effects of the drug. And,
yes,
and when we see all these ads on TV, and there are 800 ads per, what was it, an hour, 800 ads per hour throughout television land, on drugs. And all of them, of course, list all of these side effects. And my thinking is that, first of all, direct-to-consumer advertising,
mm-hmm,
is to raise revenue, to,
right,
get people to go into their doctor and say, oh, I just saw this on TV. Could you write me a prescription?
Yep. Yeah.
And it has done that. But I think that the other benefit is that they are issuing a public statement, and they do it just real quick, and they don't do all of them because I have the PDR, and I know that they only list a few of them. They list those things that are side effects so that they can say, well, we've publicly announced what side effects are. If you're too stupid,
yeah,
to understand that those might affect you, well, we certainly can't have you, having a lawsuit against us if you knew this.
Right, right. That's the whole thing. And what other products, vaccines and pharmaceuticals, do you know of can cause this kind of harm and damage and death and impairment and remain on the market?
Exactly. Firestone cars or tires?
Yes.
They had a lawsuit. They did a recall, and I think there was, I don't know how many accidents there were, but 900,000 people a year die because of medical intervention,
yes,
and there's nothing.
Nothing, and that's the thing. Let me go back to this guardianship thing again.
Yeah, please.
When you become guardianized and you're in one of these holding facilities, you can be leased out, just like foster children are leased out to pharmaceutical companies for testing. This is what happened down in Florida when that all busted up down there here two or three years ago. they found out that 80% of all foster children were on as many as 12 psychotropic drugs a day.
Yes.
Because they had been leased out by Children and Family Services to the pharmaceutical industry. They were wards of the state. They had no rights. And they were guardianized.
Right.
So they were leased out and used. And it wasn't until five of these children, who were very young, eight or under, died from this, that this came to the surface. Now, Florida tried to pass a law prohibiting the use of foster children for vaccine and pharmaceutical testing. And the FDA ran down there with big bags of money to make sure that didn't pass. And it didn't. And a lot of people had new cars and homes right after that. It was just wonderful. But this happens in every state. This guardianship issue is happening in every state. We are just now beginning to get what we would call mainstream media to look at this. And then it's very iffy.
Sure. They had no, they have no choice but to mention it, just so that people will think, oh, see, they're taking care of it. They're going to take care of this issue. And but when you talk about leasing out, the whole country is in a clinical trial.
Well, that's what I've said, Deanna. We have been commodified.
Yes.
We are commodities.
Yes.
And they are buying, selling, trading us, using us. I call us upright guinea pigs. They are doing anything they want. When you look at our vets, 22 to 30 suicides on average a day.
Right.
These are not suicides for the most part. These are intentionally medicated to death homicides.
Of course they are.
And what they do is they take medications like Seroquel and Zyprexa, which are basically the same medication by two different companies.
Mm-hmm.
They administer it in massive, massive doses.
Mm-hmm.
And the circulars on both those medications say that they are not to be taken before bed because they can stop your heart.
Which this gentleman I had on my program that is in the video, The Hidden Enemy, mm-hmm. Inside Psychiatry's Covert Agenda.
Yeah.
His son was on a cocktail of these drugs,
mm-hmm.
and he died in his sleep. And
yep.
You can compare that to SIDS with children, with babies who die in their sleep because they stop breathing because of the vaccines. And,
yep.
Yep.
And see, and they're killing. They don't want to pay their medical expenses.
Of course not.
They don't want any record of what actually happened to them. Many of them most likely do have traumatic brain injury and not PTSD.
Right.
But they give them these medications. They die. We had that happen to a man here, and they ruled it a homicide. Said he didn't take his medications right.
Okay.
And he took them just exactly the way they told him to, and it killed him.
Sure.
But this is what they're doing to them. And this is such a national disgrace that our veterans would be treated in such a way. In this recent blow-up of the VA, I don't know anybody that was surprised by that, because anybody that's had to deal with them knows that the care is virtually non-existent.
Sure.
You have to wait forever and a day to see anybody, and these guys continue to deteriorate during that time.
Yes. We have a caller.
Okay.
I sometimes forget to look. So let me see. It's 111.
Oh, it's coming in on a block. Okay.
Okay. Caller, you had a question?
Yeah, I just want to say that my son, we had got called in because he is going into sixth grade and still can't read. And what we had, they had said that they wanted to see if he might have the attention deficit. And then mm-hmm. so they bring him to a psychiatrist. Now, I told the psychiatrist, you know, when I was a kid.
Whoops. I must have done something here. Okay. I'm not sure what happened. He must have dropped.
Okay.
Maybe he'll call back. Okay.
Okay. Well, this is an attention deficit disorder. The fellow who came up with that on his deathbed admitted that was all a big fiction.
Sure.
most of us knew. And they talk about, you know, I mentioned, Deanna, about them putting mental health clinics in our schools here.
I know that the nurses, they have nurses that can write prescriptions right there at school.
Oh, my God. You're kidding. Yeah, see, we don't have that here yet. But they're going to put these in, and they're going to start testing your kids. Now, at school, they're giving them these surveys. It used to be called Teen Screen. Now it's called SAGE and a few other names. And I've told the school my girls are not to take any such tests or surveys. They said, well, some of them they have to take. I said, no, they don't. No, they do not.
Right.
And
well, in Illinois, it's a law that everybody is screened every year. And, of course, that's what they do with the military. That's how come they can get so many people onto these drugs.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the thing is, it's even with the military. What people don't understand is when you sign up for service, that's a contract. That is a contract between you and the federal government, or, well, the DOD, which is a private corporation. And that's why they talk about DOD contracting and military contractors. Who you think they're contracting with? The corporation known as the Department of Defense.
Sure.
And so you're signing this contract that basically says you expatriate yourself, and you are now the property of the Department of Defense.
Yes.
And if you get in any trouble or you do anything else, let's say that you get in a squabble with, one of your mates there, and you beat them up and break their arm, one of the things you get charged with is damaging government property. I mean,
wow.
You are government property, not a human being.
Right.
This whole thing we have built up, this whole persona of this, join the military and save your country and blah, 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 blah.
Sure, it's a bunch of baloney.
Yeah, it is. It is. These guys are cannon fodder is what
they
are.
Sure they are.
And so under the Department of Defense regulations in 2003, Donald Rumsfeld went in and changed informed consent to uninformed consent. They can now test and do anything to these guys they want to. They don't ever have to tell them they did it. If they get sick from it and they're queried about it, they don't have to admit that they did it, and they cannot be held liable for anything they did do to them.
Right. Now, when did he do that? When did Rumsfeld do that?
2003.
Oh, yes, because he was, yes.
Yeah, and he extended this not only to military personnel, but to pregnant women and minorities.
Wow.
So basically the entire population is subject to the DOD experimentation on the public, and they do this routinely. We've had things outed, a whole history of experimentation on the public done by, the CIA, the FBI, you name it, they did it. They don't give a damn about us out here.
Of course not.
And it just, when I look at, like I say, go back to this vaccine thing, how can you damage and harm that many children, and especially children?
Exactly.
And then in good conscience and stand up there and say, well, we've got to protect people. And I talk to people who are pro-vaccine and they become hysterical.
They're awful.
Yeah, you don't vaccinate. Your kids are a threat to mine. What do you mean? I thought your kids had this magic shield.
Yeah.
Don't the vaccines work? Yes, they work. Well, then why would my unvaccinated child? And I said, now here's the real truth. Your vaccinated child is a threat to my child.
Exactly.
Because for 21 days after you were intentionally infecting your child with that virus, they are doing viral shedding.
Yes.
And every time they breathe in and out, cough, walk through a room, they are shedding that virus.
Exactly.
So your child is the threat.
Wow, what did they say?
They just look at me like, ugh.
Yeah, like a deer in the headlights.
Yeah, and I said, but, all of that aside, if the vaccine works, what possible threat could my child be to yours?
Exactly.
The response is, well, if your kid gets sick, then we've got to pay for it.
How's that?
Yeah. I said, no, my insurance company will pay for it. You don't pay for it. And, well, it costs all of us. I said, yes, and when your child is damaged by a vaccine, guess who pays for that?
Yeah.
Guess who pays for that?
Yeah.
And they talk about this vaccine liability court.
Yeah.
And how, you know, they've paid out $2-something billion dollars now since its inception.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, big whoop. And this is the, I had one person on my show here a couple years ago said, well, and Marty, that is all financed by the pharmaceutical companies.
No,
I said,
it isn't.
Wrong.
By the taxpayer.
Yes, it's. I said there is a tax on every one of those vaccines,
yeah,
anywhere from $2.50 up to $35 per shot.
Yep.
That the consumer is paying, the pharmaceutical company collects and gives only a portion of to the vaccine liability fund.
And that is why they passed that law in 87.
Yep.
So that the vaccine manufacturers would not be liable.
Right. Now, can you imagine manufacturing a car that if you drove down the road, the wheels were liable to fly off and you could end up in a ditch and dead and everything else, getting a special court set up for them to protect them from liability for their faulty equipment?
Exactly.
You know, but we allow this much because they're saving humanity. You had Bill Gates going over there into Nigeria or India.
Yeah.
And 47,000, 48,000 kids now with what they call acute flaccid paralysis. It's vaccine-induced polio.
Yeah.
It is the mutated virus that mutated in defense of that vaccine in response to it. And it is more virulent than the wild virus.
Wow.
And it does not respond to the vaccine because it's a mutation. So this got so bad over there that when the equivalent of Red Cross truck came around to give free vaccines in your community, they jumped on them and killed them.
Good.
And that's what I thought. Well, Gates has come up with a new plan since people are fighting vaccines so bad. And this guy is just openly a eugenicist.
Oh, always has been. His parents were also.
Yeah. He's spent over half $1 billion developing aerosol vaccines.
Right.
So they'll just spray everybody and you'll get the vaccine whether you want it or not. And I think people like him ought to be sequestered somewhere to protect the public.
Yeah, in hell.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good place. And
I'm sorry, but I just...
No, that's...
Don't
that,
like this man.
Good suggestion there. But, you know, like I say, and then these people are so sociopathic. They are so narcissistic.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that they are causing so much harm and damage, that they have destroyed lives, that they have ended lives, that they have irrevocably altered lives.
Mm-hmm. All in the name of humanity.
Yes, and the prophets.
Yeah.
I just put up an article, Deanna, something that has hung in the back of my head for a long time, was knowing what I know about genetic modification, which is not all that much, but enough to know how the process works. And I'm seeing this correlation between how they create genetically modified plants.
Mm-hmm. Now, which article?
I just put it up here a couple days ago, a day or two ago, and it's vaccines, are we genetically modifying humans?
Okay.
And
yes.
I'm reading on all of this, and my article basically is a questioning, are the intents of vaccines, because you can't look at their track record and tell me that the intent is to prevent any communicable disease.
Right.
You can't have this much death and carnage and tell me that's your intent. But when you look at transgenics, you see the same method used, the splicing in of genes from an unrelated species. So if you take a strawberry and you inject frog genes into it, supposedly, so it doesn't mold as fast,
mm-hmm.
is it still a strawberry?
Right.
What is it?
Right.
It's a chimera of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
But we are doing this with vaccines. A vaccine that from 0 to 5 years of age, every vaccine has human diploid cells in it.
Right.
And for those who don't know what that is, that's where they take aborted fetuses, the lungs from aborted fetuses, which is why we will never stop abortion, is because they are using these aborted fetuses.
They use every single thing that they possibly can from
mm-hmm.
anybody they possibly can. For anything they possibly can.
Yes. Well put. But so your child from 0 to 5 years old, if you're on this vaccine schedule, is getting a million or more strands of someone else's DNA, complete with any genetic abnormalities, complete with whatever. Now let's throw in the mix. Dog DNA, swine DNA, chicken, monkey, whatever else. Now your child and older has the DNA strands of unrelated species that are transfective, meaning they cross the barriers and seek out the original DNA and attach themselves to it. Now we've altered whoever that person was supposed to be, and we've done it. It's irreversible. What is the end result? Now, if you're doing this to children through their whole lifetime, and they become of childbearing years, and they're already infected, and this is an infection. They're already infected with the DNA of non-related species, and they reproduce.
Yeah.
Two of them get together. What is it they have reproduced? Is it human? And at what point, there's only, depending on who you talk to, what you look at, there's only 1.5% to 5% difference in the DNA between human beings and great apes.
Wow. If they can, in fact, conceive.
Right. And we have a infertility rate now pushing 50%, both here in Canada, who have an identical vaccine schedule that was started at the same time. So this whole generation coming up, we're running, I think it's 42 to 50% on average infertility.
I know so many people who cannot get pregnant. It was never a problem 20 years ago or 30 years ago.
Heck no. And there, the one causal link is vaccines.
Sure.
And then you look at Gardasil,
sure.
One of my really big pet peeves.
Yes.
Has killed over 10,000 girls so far that they'll admit to. 187,000 adverse event reports. We have girls paralyzed, going blind, in chronic seizure, everything from the Gardasil vaccine.
Yes.
And so my speculation when this first came out is when these girls get to be of childbearing years, can they in fact? What they're finding is if they've had the Gardasil vaccine and they're trying to squash all of this and little bits are coming out here and there, is they're 9 times more likely to spontaneously abort if they, in fact, can get pregnant at all.
Right.
And what they have found is if they've had the Gardasil vaccine, there is a withering of the eggs and the fallopian tubes and ovaries. There is a withering. The eggs are basically unviable. They're dead.
Right.
So now we know what Gardasil was about. Merck has had to come out and admit that, their testing might have been a little bit flawed. Now they don't know that it actually will prevent any cervical cancer. They just think it might. Well, you just thinking it might isn't good enough for me to risk my girls with.
Sure.
It isn't. And
now, how many adverse events from Gardasil?
Over 187,000.
Wow.
And what they do is they try to soften it. And by softening, what they mean by softening is the doctors, like we've had girls collapse in the doctor's office right on the floor right after the shot.
Right.
Oh, they're faking.
Yes.
The only thing is they're unconscious, you know.
Right.
Then they go into seizure.
Yes.
And, they're faking. They put them in the hospital. They're still seizing. They're still not conscious. We're going to put a video camera on and prove, and then 24 hours later, it wasn't the vaccine. Well, there must have been a genetic abnormality.
Sure,
that we
they always blame
about.
It on the patient.
Yeah, they must have done something else that we didn't know about before we gave them the shot. Yeah, they were alive.
Yes.
And so they do what's called softening, and they try to claim that they've inserted things into these girls' files that were not present before this incident.
Oh, to blame, okay.
Yeah, see, to try and explain away, to cover up and soften the report on the adverse site. And doctors are refusing to report adverse events on vaccines of any kind. They won't take the data. It took, I think it was in 2002, I think that they finally forced them to start collecting the information between SIDS in relationship to vaccines. mm-hmm. how recent had there been a vaccine to the SIDS event. And before that, they were prohibited by law from collecting that data, even asking about it, noting it in their files.
And yet, the FDA has MedWatch, and they say, oh, well, only 1% usually ever, report any event.
Yeah, well, the thing is, see, the FDA, there again, if you watch the FDA, if a lot of reports start coming in, all of a sudden the MedWatch site tanks out, zeros out, and it starts over, see? So this is how they're getting a form of softening.
And then all of those are lost. Oh,
yes,
what a shame.
Yes,
we don't know what happened. We don't know what happened to the archives. We don't know what happened to all those records.
No.
They're just gone, and we just don't know how to get them back.
We didn't have a backup, you know.
Yeah. Oh, what a shame.
Of course, they can tell you every damn word you spoke or wrote 50 years ago, but they didn't have a backup for this, right?
Yeah.
But and we saw this when we were fighting the National Animal Identification System. USDA had this commenting thing going, and on one evening there were 82,000 negative, don't do this, this is crap, don't do it. And the next morning there were 2,000.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Well, that's the other thing. I mean, there's some negative factors with regard to computers because they can go in and do all these changes.
Yeah, yeah. So. And they can change it. I've seen on my own website where my stats have dropped right before my eyes.
Yeah.
It's right before my eyes.
Yeah.
And you're on Blog Talk, so you know the deal with the stats there.
No, I don't, because you're my seventh person that I've interviewed on Blog Talk. So talk to me about Blog Talk.
Well, don't pay any attention to the stats reporting on there. They supposedly got hacked a year ago May. I don't believe that. I don't believe they were hacked. I think this was when they reprogrammed, reset everything, and this is when they went after the big name brand shows. And the rest of us, the bread and butter of Blog Talk, the whole platform went down for about 48 hours. And when it came back up, everything was different. At the same time, the CEO of Blog Talk comes out and says that their focus has changed, and now they're going after branding and this and that, something else. And so everybody's stats dropped anywhere from 75 to 95%. And people, the hosts on there were just screaming. What happened? What happened? Oh, they're going to, it'll write itself. It'll fix itself.
So there are really more listeners than
oh, my God, yes. I have a friend who occasionally does net metering for me on one particular show that I knew I had a lot of traffic on.
Uh-huh.
Had done net metering for me on that show. And according to Blog Talk, even I wasn't on there. Zero, nada. Nobody.
Oh, my gosh.
According to the net metering, I had close to 50,000 listeners and that came into that show and stayed for 10 minutes or longer.
Wow.
And so I brought this to Blog Talk, and, oh, they didn't know it. Well, they'd have to see, and they'd look at it. They'll get back to you, but they never do.
Sure.
And there must have been 50 to 100 hosts at various times on there is going, what the hell are you doing? You know? And, as far as Blog Talk goes, it's a good base to operate from. I went into syndication here about 3 months ago with a startup company, which is just going gangbusters. It's putting me on AM/FM across the country along with many other people. But,
really?
And, I get a lot of traffic that way, and but it's just like I say, it's an excellent platform for, especially where you mentioned at the beginning of your show, you know, you don't have any corporate sponsors. I don't either.
Uh-huh.
If I run commercials, it's public service for some issue I'm involved in,
uh-huh,
or advocating for, and but I don't have any paid sponsors. I don't have anything. And we run an open 2-hour show and just roll with it. And I do my show on Sunday nights on guardianship abuse and other things. Been working with CCHR on that. And
oh, don't you love them?
Oh,
I love those people.
I do, too.
I just, oh, I am just so impressed with the work that they've done.
Yes.
But boy, have they been criticized. Oh my goodness.
Well, it's, you know, the thing is, and I talked about this on my show last night about the constant attacking, like, against me. Yes, and there's people in every issue. There's two core groups in every issue. The first core group is the ones that are, you know, trying to get something done. They're trying to expose the issue. They're trying to, you know, actively stop whatever's happening. Then there is the second core group that claims that that's what they're about, but they spend their time attacking everyone else, making derogatory remarks, trying to destroy whatever everybody else is doing. They'll assassinate your character. They'll, you know, print all sorts of libelous things all over the net about you. But they want to be the celebrity. I'm not in this to be a celebrity. I'm too old and I'm not marketable anymore.
Right.
And
I mean, not right. I'm not.
No, but I, you know what I'm saying. Well, you are, you know. Thank you, Deanna. And
no, I was just agreeing that I knew you didn't want to be a celebrity.
Yeah. But you know what I'm saying. It's people's intentions are different. And so when you start getting this negative thing, it's for two reasons. Number one, somebody envies the exposure you've gotten that you've worked hard for.
Sure.
Okay. And number two is they want attention for themselves. They want to be in that position, but they lack the skill. They lack the tenacity. They lack whatever it takes, and it becomes very apparent very quickly if you speak with them that it isn't about the issue at all. It's about them. And so you have to separate those two core groups, and I prefer to stay with people who are trying to get something done. I've made my show available to anyone and everyone that wants to come on it. I have, you know, been a guest on, I couldn't even tell you how many shows. I started out on RBN many years ago with Mark Dankoff. It was the first interview I ever did.
Yeah.
And but it's just gone from there. I've been on in France and Germany, England, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and all over the United States. And this didn't happen overnight.
No.
You know what I'm saying? It didn't happen overnight. It was because of articles that I wrote. It was because of activist work that I did. And the thing was, and like you, I think it's like you, I don't get paid.
No, I don't get paid. I don't even, I publish my own books, which cost money. And I probably break even. I don't, you know, I'm not making any money doing this. I do it because I have to.
Right. Right. Same here. It's something I'm compelled to do.
I think you're too.
The same way. I have thought many times about letting it go, leaving it alone, and then I just can't. And like I say, I'm not getting anything out of this. It takes, you know, personally, because it takes an inordinate amount of my time, as you know.
Oh, absolutely.
And a lot of my energy takes time away from things I want to be doing, like painting pictures or playing with clay, and which I thought I'd be doing at this point in my life. And so, but the idea, but you'll hear people say, and I know they've said it about you as well, well, they're just in it for the money. Well, we're waiting for the money. Please pull that truck up now, please. Because obviously after all these years, there must be a semi-load of it sitting somewhere with my name on it. And I'm waiting. We need it. You know, it just, and see, there's another way that you can see who's about the issue and who's about themselves. The idea that what they're telling you is, if I was doing this to the extent you're doing this, somebody'd have to pay me. You and I do it because we're passionate about it.
Exactly.
We believe in what we're doing, and it's what we have to contribute. And so money was never the object.
No, it was never. I never even thought of money. I just thought, if I know something, I have a moral obligation to let other people know about it, because And because so many children are being damaged, so many people are being hurt. All the wars and it's just, you know, you just have to say something.
You do. And that, like I say, with this guardianship thing, I got involved in this, and when I said, I announced it on the show, and it was just when I was first starting out on radio and on my own, and I had said, well, you know, I think I'm going to do a show once a week just about this. And I'm telling you, it, when I said that, it was like a floodgate opened. My phone for 2 weeks, 24 hours a day, never stopped ringing. People were calling me from all over the country, from out of the country. This happened, that happened. They still, we've got one case out in Washington State, Dorothy Griega. Dorothy died 7 years ago. She was a very wealthy woman, and she had several charity trusts set up in one nationally known bank. And they began siphoning the money out of that bank over to a Wells Fargo bank, and they set it up under a phony charitable account with her name on it, with a phony tax identification number that the IRS is fully aware of, and they began siphoning money out of the one bank over to the other bank. Dorothy Griega has been dead for 7 years. They're just in the end process of taking the last of her millions. Every year they are required to file an annual report of what happened to her money and how it was distributed, which they do. And none of it went to the charities. But the last statement on the inventory says, to benefit the ward. The ward was dead 7 years.
Yeah.
And
wow.
This goes on. A friend of mine out in Boston, Lisa Belanger, she's an appellate attorney. Her father was an attorney for 50 years. He retired here about maybe 5 years ago, had a $9 million estate. The predators descended on him. He is basically under house arrest. They have stolen everything this man had, personal possessions, including a $75,000 Da Vinci watch.
Appeared
on the inventory. They broke into his safety deposit box at the bank where all of his papers were on his wills, his trust, everything else, and claimed it was empty. He
kept it for 30
years, but it was empty. His estate, once worth $9.5 million, is now down to about $2.5 million. The family has gotten nothing. They cannot see him. And he's just being drained.
Wow.
She has fought. She has gone in front of the Massachusetts Judicial Review Board, everything. They won't hear it. They won't accept her complaints.
And she's an attorney?
She's an attorney.
And he was an attorney?
Yeah. Oh, now, there was Barbara Johnson out there in Massachusetts, in Boston, who tried to expose the corruption that was going on in these courts. It got so bad. They disbarred her, and this is what they do. I call it professional cannibalism.
Sure.
The Bar Association will turn on any attorney who actually does try to represent their client.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And they eat them alive. They ruin their careers. They ruin mm-hmm. their business. They do everything they can. They assassinate their character. They will just do anything and everything they can to them, to destroy them.
Same way that it works in medicine. If
yes.
a doctor breaks the law of silence, mm-hmm. the code of silence, they're dead.
Yep. And so Barbara Johnson had written a book called Behind the Black Robes.
Mm.
And she had to do it. She lives out of the country. They took a contract out on her.
Yeah, wow.
They shut her up. And she fled the country. And it's probably the only reason she's still alive.
Yeah.
But we have attorneys all over the country. That if this, I have a good friend in New Jersey, Al Lanuto, who fought corruption in the New Jersey system there, and they've absolutely destroyed this man. A very moral, one of the few people I've ever known in my life that, whose moral character is just absolutely unassailable, and they've absolutely destroyed this man. Destroyed his family, destroyed his practice, took their home, took everything they owned because he went against the crime machine that is the New Jersey state government.
Wow, and that's always been the case with New Jersey.
Oh, yeah, bad news up there. And but we see this happening all over the country. Now, what we are seeing happen in response to this, particularly the guardianship abuse issue, is we had Clear the Bench Colorado, where a citizens group formed, and they forced three of the Supreme Court justices of the state of Colorado off the bench because of corruption. They now, Arizona is setting up Clear the Bench Arizona, and they are specifically going after these so-called administrative judges in these probate and family courts. And they are trying to disbar the bar. And I think this needs to happen in every state. If we don't get the death grip this bunch has on our courts, if we can't stop this, we're all lost.
Yeah.
Because these people absolutely, they're supposed to be the protectors of the law, and they are anything but.
Right.
It just, couldn't help think, like when Walker over there in Wisconsin was screaming about the unions, the terrible unions.
Yes.
He never mentioned the Bar Association.
Yes, isn't that amazing?
Yeah, never said a word about the Bar Association, which is the biggest closed union in the country.
Yes.
And you have to pay your union dues, your bar dues, in order to practice law. Now, why, ask yourself, should someone have to go all the way through 6-8 years of college to become an attorney, graduate, and then have to go to these people and get permission to practice?
Well, that's the same thing with the American Medical Association. You have to have be certified, be licensed. And that does raise a couple of very good questions. And that is, well, secret society. I think they're both secret societies.
Yeah. And if you look at how they both operate, it is to keep control of what is a very lucrative industry.
Sure.
Control what is said and how things are done. If you look at the statutes in every state written by the Bar Association, it's all written to profit. Florida is such a prime example of guardian abuse.
Oh, I mean, look at all the old people down there.
Yeah. But we have out a travel advisory, don't go to Florida.
Yeah.
If you're in Florida and you get sick, get on a plane and get the hell out of there.
Yeah.
You look at their statutes, and there's a section called definitions. So go to definitions. The very first definition says that everything will be done to, you know, the way the ward wants it. Bull. But in no case will anything be done that is not within the Bar Association's rules and regulations.
Right.
So you just blew off that first part of the sentence.
Sure.
And then you read through this thing of what all of these things mean. Now, the big argument that has been going around was, number one, if people don't quit asking for their civil rights, I swear I'm going to implode. I'm not kidding. I'm like, have the screaming epizooties from an old lady fit. You do not want your civil rights. Civil rights are privileges granted by the government, and what they grant, they can take away.
Sure.
You want your natural rights and liberties,
right,
your constitutional rights. Quit asking these people for favors. Demand what is yours.
Right.
But you see, I want my civil rights. And they can't figure out why they keep getting bounced out of these courtrooms. It's
mm-hmm.
because you're asking for something you don't have.
Right.
You only have it as long as they allow you to have it. But your inalienable rights, meaning rights you cannot be separated from, is that Bill of Rights, the right to due process, to free speech,
mm-hmm.
freedom from or of religion.
Mm-hmm.
You just, all of those things, those are your rights, inherent rights as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like I said, statute is set up to avoid specifically this. Quit asking them for favors.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is jury trial and trial by jury. If you ask for a jury trial, see, these are weasel word swaps, and you have to learn to navigate them.
Mm-hmm.
A jury trial, who's the top juror in the courtroom? The judge.
Mm-hmm.
So if you ask for a jury trial, the judge will say, yeah, I'll give you a jury trial. And then when you get to court, I'm the jury.
Yeah.
The only jurist here. if you ask for a trial by jury, now they have to bring in from the community. They have to bring in and seat an
right.
actual jury. But most people don't know that, and so they will go into court and say, I want a jury trial. Okay, got it. And it's a big insider joke.
Yeah.
And but it's things like this. I just, when I see what has been done by the Bar Association to the elder population in this country, to our children, to disabled adults, to anybody that gets in their crosshairs and it looks like they can make a dime off of, it makes me sick at my stomach.
Now, where does the money go?
Yeah.
Where does it go?
Well, they're all driving big high-dollar cars, living in big high. We've got predators. We've got one running down there in Florida who in 2007 was in total bankruptcy. Now, according to Florida statute, because she was in bankruptcy, she's not allowed to be a guardian. But she's been working as a guardian and only as a guardian since that time.
Mm-hmm.
She is now a multimillionaire.
Wow, I guess we know where it went in that case.
She has numerous luxury homes and vehicles.
Okay.
And the only thing she's done is to be a guardian. But they don't see anything wrong with that. And it... 1 year here, 2 years ago, in 1 year alone, $42 million taken from families. Now, the GAO has come out every year with a report on guardianship abuse
mm-hmm.
and the fact that $2.5 to $3 billion a year is stolen from the elderly by guardians. But they got quickly slapped down, so they had to change the wording a little bit, and usually by family members or friends, raw. In 4 to 5% of the time, it is a family member or an associate.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the time, it's these professional fiduciaries, these
mm-hmm.
predators, these strangers to the family. But the actual total being stolen from the elderly is estimated to be somewhere between $7 and $10 billion.
Wow. I guess the best way of setting your assets in order is really to have them in, it, like if you're married, have them in both the spouse and, both spouses.
Well, yeah, won't help you.
Really? Oh, because they can remove the, okay.
Won't help you a bit. And the other thing is people, what they have done is they might have gotten an older asset report on someone that showed that maybe they had a piece of property or they had bonds or they had something
mm-hmm.
maybe 3, 5, 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not there now. It was sold, traded, or given away.
Mm-hmm.
The judges are now going back and the attorneys and guardians are demanding they go back 3, 5, and 7 years to see if anything was stolen.
Oh.
They call it stolen. Sold, traded, or given away. And if it was, they go after whoever has it and make them return it because they want that too.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm serious.
Oh, my goodness. Now, is there any one state that this occurs in more than others?
Florida is an absolute screaming hotbed. California, a close second, then New Jersey and New York. But it is occurring in every state. It is the same system conducted exactly the same way in every situation.
Wow.
In absolutely every situation. The one common denominator in all of this is the Bar Association, which wrote the statute in every state.
Right.
So it is set up identically in every state. It operates identically in every state. This is the one court that the guardian and the attorneys can levy all kinds of charges against the family that they never have to prove. They never have to produce any evidence. They're never even asked to produce any evidence. They just simply have to levy the charge. Now, in the cases where an investigation, which is a rare thing, ensues, even when it's found, which it is 96% of the time, to be unfounded, the charges against the family are unfounded, those charges remain on the case as if they were fact.
Wow.
They are never removed. And you will find it difficult to find any reference to the fact that the charges were unfounded anywhere in the court case.
Wow.
It is the sickest, most predatory, disgusting system. And like I say, it started with our kids. And that, like I say, was so lucrative, so easy, such easy pickings.
Mm-hmm.
We set up APS and we went after the elderly. Everybody over the age of 60, 75% of all the real wealth in this country is held by people 60 and older. That's property.
Oh, so that's a target. I mean, that's an obvious target.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's who they're going after. Now, let's take somebody who's disabled. Let's say they have a brain injury. You could take care of them at home for probably $2,000, $3,000 a month, and that's providing them
with anything that they want. Yeah.
Yes. Services that they need. But that's not good enough. They put them under a guardianship, put them into a residential home or a holding facility, maybe a participating hospital,
mm-hmm.
and suddenly the value of that disabled individual jumps to around $200,000 to $250,000 a month.
Wow.
That's insurance, that's Social Security, that's federal funding, state funding, grants, subsidies. It is a money machine. We just had in the Twin Cities, we have a predator running down there who had a brain injured young man that basically they put on the neuroleptics, caused him more brain damage. He was in a total vegetative state, and he goes back to the probate court. Now, all of this man's money has disappeared. His insurance has been tapped out. The hospital doesn't want to keep him anymore because...
Well, the insurance is tapped out.
Yeah. So what's this guy going to do? And he's raided the guy's estate. There's nothing left there. So he goes back to the probate court, to the same judge who gave him guardianship, and says, there's nothing else we can do for this guy. I want to pull the plug on him. And the judge says, well, you can't do that. That's too much power for one person to have, and denies it. So he goes to state court. They upheld the lower court's position. He goes to the state Supreme Court of Minnesota, who said, and I wrote an article about this and went after him, who said that the statute that said that the guardian could make medical decisions now and everything was extended. It really meant that they could call for end of life if they thought it was necessary. It really implied that. So my article dealt with the fact that no, there was no intention to imply that, because further on in the statute, it says in the event that end of life is desired or called for, you must come back to the court with the medical providers and with the family, and it must be a collective decision. So they totally ignored that. I wrote an article to that effect, that the Supreme Court of the state of Minnesota obviously either hadn't read the statute and just hurried up and signed this, or they did know about the statute and they intentionally lied and deceived the public, and that ultimately in either case they weren't fit to be making these decisions because obviously they were either uneducated, uninformed, or they simply didn't care. I got letters from two judges telling me to retract the article.
Oh, my gosh. You're kidding.
No, I wrote them back and said, when you can show me where I'm wrong, I most certainly will. I'll do it with an apology. Never heard another word. And what it stands now as law in Minnesota, that a guardian can at will call for end of life. And he said basically what it got down to is nobody was going to pay for any more treatments to this guy. They had drugged to death. And had turned into just nothing, laying there. They'd absolutely made mush of his brain, what was left of it, and they killed him.
Wow.
And Sarah Harvey, that I spoke to you about initially,
sure.
They have tried repeatedly to starve and dehydrate her husband to death, and she has fought like a banshee to keep him from doing it because they're afraid insurance is going to pull out.
Wow.
They've tried on three different occasions to get a court order to allow them to starve and dehydrate him to death.
Yes, which calls to mind the young woman, Terry Carrie
Schiavo.
Schiavo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It just it is such a sick system, Deanna. It is such a sick system. And it's happening right under everybody's nose, right in your face. And people's response to it when it happens, and you say, you know, they've done this, they've done that, and they took mom, they took dad, and we can't see them. Well, you must have done something.
Yeah.
No, you didn't have to do anything. And these are the same people that will scream bloody murder when it happens to them. The same people, and I was one of them, Deanna. I was one of them. I thought, this can't be right. What is this woman talking about?
Sure.
You know, and then I found out it was just far, far worse than what she was telling me, able to tell me. And
of course, she hadn't looked into the background. She was just seeing it from her point of view and hadn't really researched it as something that is going on, well, all over the country.
Right. Well, we know now, these years later, just how prevalent it is, how pervasive it is. And I have never in my life come to disrespect a group of people as much as I have attorneys.
Oh, yes. And they act like they are doing something for you.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest thing that they really are doing, they are running up the tab.
Yes, ma'am. That's another thing in this, Deanna. I could just give you stacks of families that have taken out second mortgages, that have spent their kids as college funds, that have sold their assets to pay one attorney after another attorney after another attorney, anywhere from $15,000 to $50,000 retainers to get mom or dad out of this hell that they've been put into. They walk to the door of the courtroom. The attorney turns around and says, I can't represent you, and walks away.
Really?
There is no refunding of all that money, and they will continue to bill them for phone calls, for letter writing, and everything on top of this massive retainer. We've got families that have been through as many as 12 and 15 attorneys, one after another, who has done exactly the same thing to them. The other thing they do is they meet ex parte with the opposing attorney and the judge, and before you ever walk in that courtroom, everything's all a done deal and settled, and it's just a kangaroo court and a dog and pony show, and you're out the door. And this just happens constantly, just constantly. And there's never, we've written the Bar Association, the Department of Justice about this. We have gone to a state attorney generals, to governors, to legislators, and said, this is what they're doing. If I took my car down here to the local shop and said, I need you to change my oil, and he said, well, I need a $50 deposit first, Marty, before I do that. And I gave him the $50, came back the next day, and he said, oh, I decided I didn't want to change your oil, but you can't have your money back.
Wow.
I could sue him, but
sure,
you can't do anything to these attorneys. And they call it payrolling, and they'll keep filing into these guardianship cases over these vexatious lawsuits. If you did it, that's what it'd be called, or frivolous lawsuits. You'd
uh-huh.
be nailed for that. But they'll do it over and over, because every time they file a motion into that guardianship case, the estate has to pay them. And that's what people need to know, is the estate pays for its judge, jury, and executioner. They pay for everything.
Wow.
Even the people who are trying to harm them, they have to pay all their fees and expenses and everything.
And what you're saying is that the two opposing attorneys talk about, and we're not talking just outside of the guardianship issue, just
mm-hmm.
on general, you know, if one person mm-hmm. sues another, or one party sues another party,
yep.
that the attorneys involved in the case will meet together mm-hmm. without telling the people who are paying them.
Right.
That they are meeting together, and that they are going to really, what they're going to do is run up the tab.
Right. And
then,
have, yeah.
What if the person doesn't get represented at all? The attorney that has run up this tab does not represent the party in court, and something happens. They will not
refund money. Your only recourse is to go to the Bar Association and file a formal complaint with them. So you have the wolves protecting another predator. And you go to them and you file a complaint. This attorney took, you know, let's say $20,000, said they'd represent us failed to show up in court, refused to represent us, and we can't get our money back. And they'll write you back, we've reviewed your case, and we can find no wrongdoing on the part of the attorney, which is actually a very sick black joke, because they are telling you the truth. They didn't find anything wrong, because the way they set the system up, what that attorney just did to you is perfectly legal.
Oh, my gosh. Holy cow.
You've got right there in Chicago.
We've got a lot of things here in
Cook
Chicago.
County Courthouse.
Yeah.
And I can't remember which floor of it is that handles probate, but they call it the Little Shop of Horrors. And there is a cable news broadcast right there in Chicago by Ken and Bev Cooper called Cooper's Corner,
mm-hmm.
where she talks about this extensively, what goes on at the Cook County Courthouse in guardianship.
Wow.
It is just absolutely one of the most miserable, abject places you would ever want to end up.
Hmm. Oh, my goodness. Well, I had a friend that we took an Italian class together, and mm-hmm. she was an attorney, and then she became an elected judge. There was such a big difference in her
mm-hmm.
after she became a judge.
Yep. Well, you're put in a position where you have absolute power, no accountability. People can contribute stocks or cash money to your retirement account through the CRIS reporting system anonymously.
Oh.
This way we can launder bribery money. And like I say, and who's going to question you? Even if you do something illegal, the chances that your higher-ups that are supposed to be keeping you in line will do anything to you is just about nil and none. So it's a very powerful position to be in.
I'm sorry, we have another caller.
Okay.
Okay.
Hello?
All righty.
Deanna? Hi,
708, okay.
Yeah, from you know where I'm from.
Okay.
I'm fascinated with your guest and her topic. In fact, I went into a rage several times while listening of what people are getting away with. I was motivated to call here in the last 10 minutes if your guest could comment on how people can protect themselves from these vampires. And offshore asset protection trusts, not many people know about them or are familiar with them, but I have my stuff offshore in an asset protection trust. The key thing is it has to be out of the jurisdiction of the United States government.
Oh.
Yeah, these are oftentimes referred to as pure trusts.
Okay.
And they're really cracking down on them, not for the really big dogs. The offshoring that's done by corporations and extraordinarily wealthy people. But for the regular Joe out there, they're really cracking down on them and breaking these pure trusts open, and they're going to be nailing people for tax avoidance and evasion and all of that stuff. It's going to be the IRS that'll come. And this is what because a lot of people were doing exactly what you're talking about, trying to put their assets out of the reach of these courts in this country.
Well, if you file your FBAR and your FATCA reports, there's really nothing the IRS can do about it. They can't, other than something illegal. And
mm-hmm.
There are jurisdictions that's their specialty, is asset protection
mm-hmm.
trust. And he's an American, but he deals strictly over with offshores that have
mm-hmm.
no presence in the United States. That's the key
mm-hmm.
factor. If a bank has a branch here, they're under U.S. jurisdiction. You have to go offshore, totally offshore. And another
mm-hmm.
thing, you don't sign your right. You don't give up signature authority.
Right.
And there's ways that you can structure the trust so that if a judge in this country orders you to repatriate money, that
mm-hmm.
you tell the trust, the people handling the trust, that if you ever get a letter from me saying you to send the money back, automatically deny me because I'm doing this under duress.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I would like to talk to you more, too.
Okay. Well,
so email me.
Is your email's on your website, correct?
Yeah,
yes.
Deanna
yeah.
at
yeah,
com,
and then
Marty's is also. Yeah, email
okay.
us, and Wow. Well, we are 15 minutes until the end of the program, and thank you. I'm sorry I didn't see your call before.
Yeah, I just had to throw that in there because there is a way to protect yourself.
Okay.
And this guardianship thing, I didn't realize that. Thankfully, my mother, when she passed 4 years ago, she put her stuff into a living trust, so there was no probate or anything like that.
Okay.
But anyway, I'm going to go
thank
now.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. All righty, we have reached the end of our program here. Thank you so much, Marty. We need to do this again.
Yes.
Thank you.
I enjoyed it, Deanna. Thanks
me
for having
too.
Me.
Me too. Thank you so much. All righty. Bye-bye, listeners. Take care.
Start with you.